We are so blessed this morning to have some good friends with us, Tom and Judy Brazell. We've been friends for many years. He is a precious brother in the Lord, and we've served many years together in the ministry. They have both been overseas serving as missionaries, long-term missionaries, as well as pastoring various places in the States. He was the missions director at Elam Fellowship up on the hill there at Elam for a number of years. And I'm wondering, would you just give them a warm welcome this morning as they come to share God's word with us?
Well, good morning. It is really a privilege to be here. Judy reminded me that I think this was the very first church that took us on to support us back in 84, I think it was. And so we've been friends for like almost 40 years now, right? So, and it's interesting, I've watched you age, you've watched me age, but our wives, they don't age at all, so I don't understand that. It is a real privilege to be here with you. We think so highly of this church and what God has done in it and through it. Especially, I know I've worked with Jody quite a bit over the years when I was a missions director and missions projects of various kinds, and your heart for missions and reaching out and not being content with the we four and no more kind of attitude of church. And so it's just a real privilege for me and Judy to be with you today. By the way, Judy, why don't you just stand up and wave at him? Oh, you did. Okay. Why don't you do it again? No, I'm just kidding. So next month we'll be married 48 years, right? 48 years next month. So it's... And some of you will know what I mean when I say 48 years goes that fast. Some of you understand that. So anyhow, I want to share with you today out of a portion of Scripture that you're very familiar with, but I just think it's appropriate for where we are today. By the way, if you have the YouVersion of Bible on your device and you open it up, you can go to that next slide, please, because it shows, there we go, you just hit on events, and you'll see Pioneer Christian Fellowship there, and tap on that, and then everything that's on the PowerPoint will be in your phone, and you can make your own notes if you want to, and if you want to save it, just hit save, and it will be there until you delete it. So that's just something that that you can use technology where we can. So I want to speak to you today out of James, and these words really became very... meaningful to me. I began to be the church in Wellsville, where I'm from. They had a pastoral departure that was a little unplanned, and it kind of put the church in a little bit of a difficult situation. And so I stepped in as the interim pastor. And so I thought it was difficult to pastor the church after some of the things that had happened. But then the pandemic came, and so it was like you're getting pummeled. And so how many of you know this past year, 16 months or so, have really been difficult and have been very hard on churches? And so as I've been going through some of this experiences, these verses have taken special meaning for me. I'm going to read out of James chapter 1, verses 5 through 8. I'm going to read out of the J.B. Phillips translation, which will be up on the wall there on the screen. But after I read this, then I'm just going to go back to my normal King James. But I just wanted to read this out of the J.B. Phillips translation. It says this. It says, when all kinds of trials and temptations crowd into your lives, my brothers. Of course, you realize when he says my brothers, he includes sisters as well. Don't resent them as intruders, but welcome them as friends. Realize that they come to test your faith and to produce in you the quality of endurance. But let the process go on until that endurance is fully developed, and you will find you have become men and women of mature character with the right sort of independence. And if in the process any of you does not know how to meet any particular problem. He is only to ask God, who gives generously to all men without making them feel foolish or guilty. And he may be quite sure that the necessary wisdom will be given him, but he must ask in sincere faith without secret doubts as to whether he really wants God to help or not. The man who trusts God but with inward reservation is like a wave of a sea carried forward by the winds one moment and driven back the next. That sort of man cannot hope to receive anything from God, and the life of a man of divided loyalty will reveal instability at every turn. Wow. I mean, there's just so much. That's why all of us probably have heard 100 sermons on this, because there's so much in there. But basically, it talks about our trials and temptations and what attitude we're supposed to have, and our acknowledgement of need and receiving the answer. And so just let me say a couple of things, and then I'll get into the meat of where I want to go. It doesn't say if you have trials and temptations, you're going to have them. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials. So it's going to happen. It does happen. And so we're going to have to face these things. These things come our way, we're going to have to face them. 1 Peter 4:12 says, don't think it strange concerning the fiery trial, which is to try you as though some strange thing happening to you. You know, sometimes things go bad, and we say, wow, what a strange thing. It's not strange. It's something there's nobody exempted. We all go through these things. And in that, there's supposed to be an attitude that we have, and we see that in James 1:4. It says that we're to let patience have its perfect work, that we may be perfect, which means mature and complete, lacking nothing. So it's this patience is something that we're learning, something that's being developed in us, and it's being developed in us in a crucible of difficulty sometimes. So we need to allow God to do what he wants to do without fussing, okay? And that's, I don't know how you're doing on that. How are you doing on that? I don't know. But I know I don't always do so good on it, at least not in the beginning. Sometimes I have to get my perspective. So then we have to, at those times, sometimes we just don't know what's going on. We just... It's not that we're resisting God. There we go, that's much better. It's not that we're resisting God, it's just something has happened. Something could be anything, could be interpersonal, it could be medical, it could be financial, it could be whatever. And it comes our way and we just, wow, where did that come from? And we really don't, it's not that we're resisting God, it's just that we really, at that moment in time, we're not sure, what do we do with this? And sometimes we just don't have a clue, but we don't acknowledge that to ourselves. We pretend we do, or we think we do. Or oftentimes we know ourselves that we don't have a clue, but we kind of bluff it. We kind of go through as if we did. But here's what God's advice to us in James is in verse 5. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God. So that is the advice. If you don't have wisdom, ask God. And the promise is that he's going to give it to us liberally. He's not going to hold back. He's not going to make us feel foolish. He's not going to make us feel stupid. In fact, he wants us to ask him what to do. Now, the definition of wisdom that I chose for today, I think I got this out of Webster, but I'm not sure. Thank you. I appreciate that. Wisdom is the ability to make good decisions based on knowledge and experience. Okay, so knowledge is one thing. Somebody said knowledge is knowing what to say, wisdom is knowing when to say it. But we have to make good decisions based on knowledge and experience. And then sometimes we don't know what to do, and that's to be expected. But if we don't know that we don't know what to do, now, that opens up a whole window of negative possibilities. Now, I don't know. I suspect some in here will relate to this, especially the men. Have you ever bought, like, a new power tool? You go to Lowe's, and you buy it. And it's in a big box. And you're so excited. I can't wait to cut something up, you know. And so you open it up, and there on the top, the first thing you see is it's something that says, warning, do not operate this tool without fully reading, understanding, and complying with the safety features of this tool. And we take that and we put that over there. I remember my first computer I got in 1989. I just came off the mission field, and there were computers. Wow, computers, I want one. So I got a computer, and literally within 15 minutes, I had the thing inoperable. I didn't look at the manual they gave me. I mean, I was supposed to, I never saw a computer before in my life, but I did a little of this, and I did a little of that, and guess what? The computer was shot. I had to take it back to the guy who built it to straighten it out. We don't necessarily read the directions, even though we know we're supposed to, and we trip into things. Sometimes we pull from earthly experience, and it's like the guy grew up in Buffalo, in the inner city, and there, if someone pushes you, you push back. That's what you learned when you were young. And so you can carry that with you into your adult life, into your Christian life. I know a guy I used to work with, and he was a miserable sort of guy. Nobody really wanted to work with him. Somehow I got the privilege of spending a lot of time with him. And one day, I was trying to get the guy to talk, because I knew he was just, well, I suspected he had some serious deep issues. As I finally got him talking one day, and he told me the story. He said when he was just a little kid, his father put him on the mantle in their house, a fireplace. And he said, come on, come on. And so the trusting child jumps, and his father steps back and lets him fall on the floor. And he says, let that be a lesson to you. Don't ever trust anyone. Now, he took that lesson with him probably until the day he died. He was just somebody you couldn't get along with, and that's just the way he was. And so sometimes we bring this stuff with us. Sometimes we just think, well, I did something one way, this way the last time, maybe it'll work this time. And so, again, rushing in without asking God, just I know what to do kind of approach to solving problems, and we find out that it didn't necessarily work. Jesus didn't really work miracles the same way twice. He was always looking for new ways. So in James chapter 3, we see another insight to godly wisdom here. James chapter 3, verses 13 through 18. It says, who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom. Now, meekness is not weakness, okay? But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your heart, do not boast and lie against the truth. This wisdom does not descend from above, but is earthly and sensual and demonic. For where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing are there. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. Now the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. So sometimes you just have to look at our lives and just take a step back and say, okay, so if I'm looking at my life objectively, which group of characteristics is affecting my life? Is it peace? And is it purity and peacefulness and gentleness and a willingness to yield? Does that describe my life, or is it bitter envy, self-seeking, and all of that? Which is it? And only you can answer that. I remember one guy I was talking to who wanted to get married. Now he came, hey, Pastor, I'd like to get married, okay? But the guy had been married four times. That's what I said to him. I said, what happened with the first marriage? Well, she did this, and she did that, and she did the other. Okay. Wow, that's not good. Well, what happened with the second marriage? Well, she did this, and she did that, and she did the other. Third marriage, it was the wife's fault again. What a shock. And the fourth marriage, he had a divorce again because she wasn't what he expected. In four marriages and four divorces, he never admitted that he did anything wrong. I didn't get involved in that. But I did tell him. I said, you know what? Until you learn, you will never stop. So he was operating on a very worldly idea of how to do things. Now, we have to ask God if we're going to know what he wants us to do. You know, we used to say things like count to 10, which is actually good advice if you're having a problem with someone. It's just hold off. I know whenever I had to write a really serious or heavy or confrontational kind of email, which sometimes I had to do, I learned to write it, and I wouldn't even put anybody in the address bar lest the computer got a mind of its own and sent it. I would just leave that empty, and I would let it sit there, and I'd come back the next day, and I would look it over again, and then I would give it to my secretary and ask her, and she would say, well, that's a little harsh, so we change that, you know. So counting to 10 is a good idea, but we have to do more than count to 10. We need to ask him in that period of time, Lord, what do I do? I mean, it's okay if we don't know, but if we don't know that we don't know, we're going to cause ourselves and other people a lot of problems. So we have to acknowledge that we don't know. That takes a little bit of humility. And even if we've been through this 100 times, it's like stop and say, Lord, what would you have me do? How do I respond to this situation? Instead of just jumping in, drawing from my past, doing what I learned growing up. There was a guy that was in a church I pastored, and when I first got to there, he was very friendly to me. And when I first got there, he was very friendly to me. And during that time when he was very friendly, the guy used to carry a pistol, a gun, which is fine. But he would tell me these stories about how he intimidated people with this thing. Now, this is illegal. You can't do this. And so he'd brandish this thing at different times, and I'm thinking, wow. And I told him, I said, you can't do that. Well, anyhow, as time goes on, he got upset with me about something. Now, he got really upset with me about something, and I don't even remember what it was. I'm sure it wasn't my fault, whatever it was. I'm absolutely certain of that. But he was upset with me, and I felt in a threatening way. So now I'm thinking, okay, this guy's, he's his elevator isn't going to the top floor, and he's carrying a gun. And so I start going to my office at different times of the day and leaving at different times, and I'm taking different routes, and I'm doing everything to be totally unpredictable because this guy is out there. So after a little bit of this, I'm thinking, this is no way to live. And so I got this inspiration. I said, I'll ask God what to do. No, I didn't do that immediately, but as soon as I asked the Lord what to do, he gave me the answer. I didn't have to spend a lot of time. It was an immediate here for you, Tom. It's right out of Scripture, Luke 6, 27, 28. But I say to you who hear, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you, and pray for those who spitefully use you. Now, I want to tell you something. That is totally different than the advice I was expecting to get from him. I was expecting the Lord to say, I don't know what I was expecting him to say, but it wasn't that. And so, but I knew it was the Lord, so I said, oh, okay. So it wasn't a huge town, and I'd have to pass by his house in my car from time to time. So I made up my mind, every time I would go past his house, I would pray for him. And I didn't pray, Lord, straighten him out, and he's crazy, help him. It wasn't that kind of prayer. It was, Lord, help him to know you. Help him to be a good husband. Help him to be a good father. Show yourself to him. Let the fruit of the Spirit come out in his life. And that's how I prayed. Now, I would like to say that everything turned around, and then it didn't. But something turned around in me, and that was what God was after. And so I stopped living in any fear at all, and I just went about my business. And he never did shoot me. So it was a very This is something that I would not have done that without God saying. And I think that's the way it is a lot of times with the wisdom of God. He's going to tell us something that maybe seems a little counterintuitive to what we would do if we just jump into a situation. So we have to realize that sometimes we just don't know. If we don't know that we don't know, we won't ask for any help. Why would we? We think we know. If we don't know that we don't know, we won't wait. Why wait for God to say something if we're not expecting him to say something? Psalm 106, verses 13 through 15, it says, "They soon forgot his works. They did not wait for his counsel, but they lusted exceedingly in the wilderness and tested God in the desert, and he gave them their request, but he sent leanness to their soul." Wow. They got leanness. They got exactly what they wanted. Somebody said, be careful what you wish for. You might get it. They got exactly what they wanted, but the end was leanness to their soul. I don't want to go through the story of all that. I'm sure you can look that up and do the research on the background. But it said they didn't wait for his counsel. In other words, they didn't say, God, what should we do in this situation? They didn't do that. They just went ahead and followed their what it calls their lusts. They lusted exceedingly in the wilderness, and so that's what happened. So if we don't know that we don't know, we won't change, because it's always the other person that's wrong. And sometimes we live there where we're just not wrong. We're right. Sometimes we ask God for things and he doesn't answer. Why? James says you ask and you do not receive because you ask amiss. You're asking for the wrong stuff. And how do you know what to ask for? Well, ask God what to ask for. Pray in tongues. If you don't know that you don't know, you're probably not going to grow. Now, when I was a quite a bit younger Christian than I am now, I was part of a church. I wasn't pastoring it. I was a deacon, and the church was a happening church. We had a good time, and the good things were happening. And then, in the midst of all this, the pastor started having some weird things go on. Like he would go into his van. He had a van, and he would go into it, and he would come out with these really odd revelations that were given to him by some spiritual being that he called the angel of the Lord. They were unbiblical things. They were damaging things. And this is going on. And he would preach this stuff, and he'd get all fired up on Sunday, and I'm thinking, that's not in the Bible. So I was a deacon, and I felt I needed to step up. Some of you know where this is going. And so I did. I went to him and I said, you either need to stop or you need to resign. And he said to me, well, I'm not stopping and I'm not resigning. Well, in that particular church, for some weird reason, which I've never seen this anyplace else, but we had it, it said that if someone on the board was at an impasse with the pastor, he could call a church meeting and resolve this thing. Ever hear anything so crazy as that? So I was on the church board, and I told him, I said, I'm going to call a meeting. We'll deal with this. This is not going to happen. And he says, well, what if you lose? I said, if I lose, I'll go away. But I said, if you lose, you go away. Fine. So we had this meeting. I don't know if you've ever been part of a bad church business meeting, but this was a whole new definition of bad. I mean, from that day till now, I have never experienced anything this bad. I mean, we were split down the middle, and the pro-pastor people were prophesying doom, and you're touching the Lord's anointed, and then these people over here were prophesying back, and it was insane. It really was out of control, and there was nobody in the room who could stand up and take control, and it was horrible. Grievous and horrible. Well, at the end, he squeaked by, and he stayed in, which amazed me, but that's what happened. So I left, just like I said I would. I took my wife, and I went home. And then, it began to bother me, because, I mean, even though this guy was in error, he's a brother, and God needed to deal with him, but he was still a brother, and he was still a friend. We'd gone through thick and thin together. And I knew I was going to bump into... Have you ever had a fight or something negative with someone, and you really don't want to see them, and you know you're going to come around the corner in the grocery store, and they're going to be standing there? And you're going to have to face this awkward moment with this person, and I knew that was coming. I knew it was coming. So I decided... I needed to do something to resolve this. So some time had gone by already, but so I prayed. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to get this done. I thought, I'll pray about this. Lord, what should I do? Again, he's so quick to give wisdom if we ask him for it. And here's the wisdom he gave me. He said, go to him and ask for forgiveness. No. That is not happening. And so we had a long period of discussing this. 6 months, he said, go, and I would say, but I was right. Now, on the theological questions, there's no doubt I was right. But I did some things in the process that weren't right, and quite a few, actually. And so I finally, at the end of 6 months, have you ever noticed when God is really dealing with something and he's talking to you about that and you want to change the subject and talk about something else? He doesn't do that. Like we didn't talk about anything for 6 months but me going back and asking for forgiveness. So finally, I said yes. So I get in my car, and it's about a 45-minute drive to his house, and I'm driving, and I'm actually thinking this is going to be like Abraham and Isaac, you know, where Isaac had Abraham, and he had the wood, and he put him on the altar, but at the last minute, you know, God was going to say, no, there's a ram in the thicket. I was waiting for that, you know, I'm just testing you, I just want to see if you do it. And it's 55 miles an hour on the thruway, and I'm doing 30 because I'm waiting. So I finally get there, and I pull into his driveway, and I waited. I'm here, and it's kind of like you see the movie with the guy in the electric chair, and the guard has got his hand on the phone in case the governor calls at the last minute for the reprieve. And so I'm waiting, and finally, I realize I got to do this. So I go and I knock on his door, and he opens the door, and he gave me the coldest, hardest look imaginable. And he said, what do you want? I said, I'd like to talk to you. He said, go ahead and talk. I said, I'd like to come in and talk to you. So he let me come in, and he sat there. He said, okay, what? So I said... He said, listen, I said, what went down? I said, I want you to know, in that process, I said, I know I really hurt you. I wounded you. And I'm really sorry. I didn't mean to do that. It wasn't my intention. It's not what I wanted to do at all. But I know I did it. Will you please forgive me? Well, he leaned back. And he smiled. And he said, I knew you'd come around. Oh. And I said, I don't want to talk about the issue. The issues, I don't want to talk about them. But the way I treated you in the process, I was wrong. Would you please forgive me? And he wasn't going to forgive me. And I decided, I went this far, I am not leaving. I'll stay for dinner, but I am not. I'm here until. So finally, he got that revelation too, that I wasn't going to go until. And so he said, I forgive you. Now, it didn't seem very sincere. I'll take it. And I would like to say at that moment in time, he would say, you know, Tom, I did some things that were hurtful too. And I would really like you to forgive me. But that ain't what happened. But after he said he forgave me, I stood up. He walked to the door. He opened the door. He closed the door. I got in the car and went home. Didn't say goodbye. So I drove home. But you know what? I was so free at that moment. I didn't care if I ran into him in Walmart, Tops, Wegmans. I didn't care. I was free. I did what God wanted me. And I actually felt like there was this fresh flow of grace happening at that point in time. Even though it took me 6 months to obey, he blessed me when I did. So some time goes by, and I get a call from him. It's several years, actually, and I get a call from him. And we hadn't talked since that day. And he said to me, he said, you know, Tom, he said, when that all went down, he said, you're the only one that ever came and tried to make things right with me. He said, I want you to know how much I appreciate that, and it touched me. How would you like to preach in my church? Now, that's like parting the Red Sea or something. That was that's like a huge miracle that he would do that, because his church was told, you have nothing, absolutely nothing to do with me. So he said, you can pray about it. I said, I don't need to pray about it. Tell me when, I'm there. So I went to his church, I preached, and went out for lunch and had good fellowship with him and his wife, and it was a good time, and we left, and that was the end of that. But I felt that was also good. So then a few years ago, maybe 6 or 7 now, I began to think about him, and I wonder how he's doing. I wonder where he is. And so I went to Facebook. Facebook has got some benefit. So I went there and started looking around. I found him. He was pastoring a church in San Antonio, Texas. I thought, wow. So I sent him a little message and asked him how he was doing and all that. And he sent me something back and told me his church. And I looked on his website and saw his wife was still involved. His daughter was in ministry. It's all this good stuff going on. And so we had this back and forth for a little while. And then I got the news that he had cancer. And I think it was leukemia, I think is what he had. And so it wasn't long. And he passed on. And when I heard he passed on, I had a sadness, of course, but I had this great sense of relief that I didn't come to this point, and now there was no chance at all for me ever to make it right with him. That I was at peace, and I would not have to take to my grave this disobedience that I was doing. It's a wonderful feeling to be obedient and to be free, but sometimes it's difficult. Sometimes when you're right and you have to say you're sorry, that's a God thing right there. That's not what we do normally. Let's look at these verses again. James chapter 1, verse 2 following. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. There's a purpose for all this. Let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. How many of you want that? And if any of you lacks wisdom, that's all of us, let him ask of God, who gives to all liberally without reproach, and it will be given him. So in the midst of our troubles and our challenges and our difficulties and our conflicts, we're told, let God have his way. He cannot have his way if we don't invite him in. He cannot have his way if you're insisting on you having your way. He cannot have his way if you move in the finite earthly wisdom, which has the traits of bitter envy, self-seeking, earthly, sensual, demonic, and it produces confusion and every evil thing out there. It's like a magnet when you begin to operate on that level of wisdom. Every evil thing is there. That's a serious phrase in that scripture verse. Every evil thing are there. But the traits of wisdom from above, pure, peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, it's a hard one. For some of us, it's harder than others. It's hard for me. Full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. And the result of operating in that wisdom is, it says, the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. Think about that. Meditate on that verse. The fruit of righteousness is sown in peace, not in conflict, but in peace by those who are peacemakers. Well, I opened by saying that I thought pastoring during this last 18 months was very, very difficult. I'm not anymore, by the way, but they have a pastor now, so that's wonderful. But it was a real handful to pastor a church during the pandemic and during the most politically divisive season I can remember. I was raised in the 60s, or I mean, I was active around in the 60s, and that looks like a Sunday school picnic compared to what we've gone through over these days. We have I don't think we've been this divided since the Civil War. And we have this political divide. And we got people on both sides declaring all kinds of things, cutting people out of their lives, even Christians. We get this pandemic. Everybody's got their idea, and I got mine too, but I'm willing to let you have yours. Will you let me have mine? I mean, churches have split. I know pastors now that their churches have been so devastated by the divisions that have come through the politics and the pandemic that they're like ready to throw the towel in. It's just been a horrible, horrible time. And then we have this culture war going on. Hey, there's things I stand for. I don't have to make that a point of division and conflict and keeping people out of my life. I don't have to revert in my righteousness to the wisdom of the world. I take my righteousness and I apply the wisdom that's first pure, peaceable, willing to yield, easily entreated. I realize that in the difficult times that we are in, I don't know what the answer is, but I know God does. And so if I ask him, what do I do with the situation? I had somebody close in my life, very close, totally misjudge me, and without even giving me a chance to clarify, what do we call it? Canceled me. Totally canceled. Out of his life. Your history. You're out of here. And I contacted him. I said, am I like out? Or he said, my moral compass, I think is how he said it, my moral compass will not allow me to have anything to do with somebody like you. There's a lot of that going on. Everybody in this room has had to deal with, what do I do with the politics of this day? What do I deal with the pandemic? What do I deal with the culture issues that are going on? That is why I think these verses are so important and so worth talking about. What do you do in this situation? Well, we have to ask God. You don't know. We've never passed this way before. Just read that in Judges just yesterday. We've never gone this way before. Do you revert to what you've always done? Somebody said, it wasn't me. I've heard it from all different people said it over the years, but if you always do what you always did, you'll always get what you always got. I didn't make that up. Somebody else did, but it's true. We have to admit that we don't know. We don't know everything God is doing in a situation. We don't know the situation that person that is attacking us. We don't know what's causing that. Is it fear? Have they been hurt? Have they themselves been attacked? We don't know. God knows. And he may actually tell you to do something that's a little uncomfortable for you, humbling. He might actually ask you to be pure and peaceable and merciful and willing to yield. Not on your convictions, but as you how you deal with people. Hold your convictions. They're good. They're yours. Be informed. Be educated. Know what you're talking about. But when you got to hold on to it, don't compromise. But understand that he's called us to unity. He's called us as a body of Christ to walk together. And if this country and this world has any chance at all, it's not found in Washington, D.C. It's found right here in this room and rooms like this all across the country. The enemy wants us split apart, angry, divided. It's what he wants because God has no plan B. It's the church or it's nothing. So it's okay if you don't know. I don't know. But we ask of God, and he gives liberally without making us feel ashamed, embarrassed, or belittled.